Lottie. The storm is still raging outside. If anything, it is even stronger now. Angry gusts pummel the sides of the manor, wind whipping leaves and other bits of debris against the window panes. I have no sense of the time, but it must be well past midnight. Morning cannot come too soon.
I can't believe he's just out there in that,
Hannah whispers. It's something I've been trying to push from my mind, but it is almost impossible not to imagine Archie's body out in the elements. I'm relieved when Stella returns to the kitchen. She sits on a stool, looking pale and exhausted. My relief turns to worry when I see she is shaking violently. No one should have to see a body like that, but the shock of it all seems to have been too much on her especially. You're cold, I say, surprised. When she looks up at me, her eyes are dark and spooked, haloed in red. I wonder if we all look that way. Haunted. I'll go find us some blankets, I say, wanting to be useful. Probably best if we all stay together down here until the police come.
Are you sure? I can come with you.
Stella's voice is weak and distant. Don't be silly. I'm fine. You sit. Drink some of this tea before it goes cold, and just rest up, both of you. I look to Hannah, but she says nothing. Her silence is concerning. I leave Stella and Hannah in the kitchen. I've become accustomed to walking around at night alone, but this is different. Lightning flashes at the windows as I make my way into the foyer. Despite how well I know the place, Grafton spooks me tonight. The walls creak and groan as I make my way up the staircase, quickly heading through the west wing. The wardrobe at the end of the hall beckons, and I go to it, tugging open the doors. I pull out several thin comforters, pausing when I see the silver hinge on one side. But I push the thought of the rooms upstairs out of my head. There's no time for that now. I fold the blankets over my arm and slam the wardrobe shut, turning and walking purposefully back down the hall. On the landing, I pause, looking up at the door to the east wing. I turn to go down the stairs, but something makes me turn back. I stand there, weighed down with blankets. This could be my last opportunity to talk to Betsy alone. I set the blankets down at the top of the stairs and move to the door. I stand at the threshold of the east wing, my fingers wrapped around the handle. Why am I afraid? I remember these handles, the curve of the latch. I was afraid then, too. I press a finger down on it and feel a small click. I slip inside, into Betsy Martin's lair. I move down the hall tentatively. The point is to talk to Betsy, to see if there's anything else she can tell me about that night. As I walk, I realize that I'm both looking for and hiding from her. The closer I come to finishing what I've been trying to do all this time, the more I almost want to give up, to take it all back and run away. I remind myself why I've tried so hard to get here. This is not just for me. This is for my mother, to give the story of her life closure, so I finally feel like I've honored her. My foot lands on a creaky board, and I stop dead in my tracks, waiting to be found out, heart racing as I listen for footsteps. Hearing none, I venture further down the hall. The door to my left is open. It is an opulent bedroom. The ceilings are tall and arched in the corners, trimmed with scrolled molding. A four-poster bed in elaborately carved dark wood stands to one side. A delicate sofa and two chairs surround a small fireplace with bronze grate. A man's shirt hangs over the side of a chair, waiting to be worn. Archie's room. I shudder and force myself to keep moving. I pass Betsy's childhood bedroom, moving toward the doors at the end of the hall. I never ventured this far into the east wing before that morning with Pradumna. The Graftons always made sure there was a separation between the family and their help. I find myself wishing he were here right now. His teasing good nature would be a welcome distraction. I pass by a row of oil portraits along the hall. Most are of men in military uniforms, the hilt of a sword bulging out from their jackets. One smaller portrait is of a woman with a tight collar circling her neck. Her face looks weary, hardened. Their eyes seem to plead with me not to go any farther. The hallway ends at the set of impossibly tall double doors, hanging wide open. I hold my breath as I pass into Betsy Martin's sitting room. The windows here are closed and bolted against the storm. Two plush chairs, their backs to me, face a fireplace that crackles festively. In the corner, a record spins on the old Victrola record player. It's a song that takes me back to my childhood. In the still of the night, I held you tight, 'cause I love, love you so. Promise I'll never let you go. I walk toward the spinning album, mesmerized. I have a flash of memory from my childhood. I am helping my mother cut potatoes downstairs in the Grafton kitchen. The radio next to the sink is on, and she is humming as she cooks, stirring a pot on the stove. A chill goes up my spine. I remember that night in May. The stars were bright above. Can I help you? Betsy's voice, sharp as glass, startles me. I spin around. She's sitting in one of the high-backed chairs. She must have been watching me for a while now. She looks entertained, the way she did as a child watching me as I moved toys around for her. The power she wielded was clearly so enjoyable to her. It always had been. Looking at her now, her face contorting into a sinister grimace, it sickens me to think of all those years I wish she were my friend. To her right is a tumbler partway full of brown liquor. She lifts it to her lips and takes a leisurely sip. The wind continues to shriek at her window. It is now or never. I think of my mother, and I stand as tall as I can, clasping and then unclasping my hands. Do you recognize me? I ask her, bracing for the answer. Finally, she smiles. It is not a warm smile. She takes another sip. A bolt of lightning flashes in the windows. It is followed by a violent crack. The sound of it striking something close by. The lights flicker off as she replies, I mean, I can't say you haven't aged today, but your demeanor really hasn't evolved much, has it? Still skittering about in those old clothes. Makes it easy to fly under the radar, doesn't it, Elizabeth Bunting?